Hi everyone. What is today? Today is December 8th, 2020. Remarkably, we are wrapping up this year and very glad that we are all here to do so. And it looks like Renee has started us. Yeah, I was thinking about you, Renee, about the missed breedings and the singleton. Jeez, oh, Pete, we have definitely have to turn that around in 2021 because I can't really figure it out, and I'm sure you can't either. Renee, remind me, were they all frozen? Were any of them naturals?
They were shipped semen from Canada, TCI, side-by-side AIs followed by a TCI, ship semen, and side-by-side AI that I added frozen to for the singleton.
Wow.
I'm over it. And then I see, I'm glad all of you have puppies, and I see at my office all these puppies. I'm just...
I know, I'm so...
kicking the dirt.
I have to tell you, I have been there. I really have. And
oh,
it's
yeah.
Such an awful feeling. It really is. It's so hollow. So I'm there with you. 2021, here we come. It will get better. Welcome, Tara. Welcome, Madeline. So glad you were here. So Jacqueline has a question, Renee. Do bloodhounds whelp with singleton pregnancies? Did you get a natural whelp or a C-section out of that?
Of course, I'm always driving.
Yeah, I know. Be careful.
The bitch was ultrasounded twice. It's a co-owned bitch. Ultrasounded twice by her general practitioner and said she was not pregnant. So I left her in South Carolina instead of bringing her home because she wasn't pregnant. And as she's starting to develop mammary tissue and sort of acting pregnant, I contacted her breeder and I said, what do you think? And she said, oh, that's pretty common. I said, okay. And on day 61, she woke up with black discharge coming out of her vulva. And I said, we have a problem, Houston.
This is not a false pregnancy.
Yeah. So they x-rayed her and we found a pretty mushed up puppy. Super guessing, but suspect died around day 40, day 45. So she resorbed everything, discharge stopped, went on antibiotics. And after sort of a week long sort of mourning, where's my puppy carrying crap around, has decided that she can continue life now.
I know you feel so badly for them because you feel pretty lousy to start with.
Horrible because it's essentially a pet owner who has this bitch. And I'm like, I'm sorry. In the middle of COVID, trying to find a hospital that's not going to tell her she needs to immediately spay the dog.
Spay her.
Like, please don't. Hold on. That was why I reached out and was like panicking. I'm like, please don't spay her. It was an adventure. So we learned from that we've established it's worth driving to someone that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, no kidding. So she was in South Carolina. Where did you end up going?
She went to one of the emergency clinics, and she ended up going back for an ultrasound by the internist that the owner used with one of her other cats, and he apparently... is able to do ultrasound very well and confirmed for us and sent pictures to all the co-owners that everything was cleared up. Had not thought of going there mostly because of COVID, he wouldn't see them. So she ended up at her general practitioner, but if we try again, I'm stuck with her until the ultrasound, which sounds like a great adventure because she's a little cuckoo.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah. It's always a wild ride bringing a dog in that you haven't had for a really long time. Cool. So let's see. Jacqueline says, in my breed, I have a singleton, a scheduled C-section at the time of ultrasound. Generally, I'm doing... Is that surgical insemination with singleton births? Huh. That does not sound good. Jacqueline, you want to get on and tell us more?
Sorry about that. I have Dobermans, and it just seems that the singletons just do not produce enough hormone to create uterine contractions. And so generally when I have a singleton birth, it's because I've done a surgical implant, and it's with, you know, dead sire semen. So but to kind of support Renee here, years ago we bred a bitch. She was not a bitch that lives with me. We did breed her, and we had her confirmed and whelped with 6 puppies. 10 days before her whelp date, they were all dead. I mean, it was just horrible.
That's pretty nightmarish. And so did you section her to get them out, or did she whelp?
She whelped. I mean, they were just black puppies. I mean,
yeah.
And it's like, how do you explain to the puppy owner or that, you know, the
bitch owner?
Because the bitch owner, I mean, the bitch herself was like 5 and a half. And we generally, we have found through our artificially assisted reproduction program that the younger we do the surgical implant with bitches, the more success rate we have.
Yeah.
For example, we had a 2.5-year-old bitch. She just had all of her health clearances. We did her to frozen implant, a litter of 12 healthy puppies. And prior to that, we had kind of, you know, bought into the urban legend that, well, you need to have your bitch needs to whelp live before you do artificial. And that's just not the case. We're in our experience, but we are very blessed. 1.5 hours from our house, we have a very dynamic reproduction vet. He's a racing greyhound breeder himself. He's well regarded within the greyhound industry. And I mean, you go in, 90% of his practice is just solely reproduction work.
Wow, that's nice.
And so, I mean, it's rough. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart, for sure.
No, that is the truth. It is not all hearts and roses and puppies, but I'm following in your footsteps and doing a frozen on a maiden bitch with dead sire semen this breeding, hopefully next week. So sometimes you just have to do it.
Well,
and I love proving bitches, but you know, you got to be able to do it.
Well, I mean, we've been doing assisted reproduction for 18 years consistently. I mean, as far as incorporating the progesterone testing, and we've with our program, we've flown bitches to Europe to breed to sires and brought them back. And of course, when you know, you have a real small window to get tickets bought to get over to Europe,
right,
and come back.
Right.
And we were very successful in that we had nice litter sizes, and we had 60, 40, 50, 50 as far as sex between males and females with doing the progesterone test. So I'm a big believer in the progesterone testing. I know there's some issue or reluctance with ultrasound, but in my situation, I have to have it, because especially when I do assisted reproduction, I need to know at 21 days whether, or 28 days, whether I've got a puppy or not. So if I do have a singleton, then I can go ahead and schedule the C-section. And I had a couple years ago, we had 20-year-old semen, and the semen itself wasn't, you know, when he implanted it, he's like, "Ooh, I don't know if we're going to get anything." I got one puppy, and he's a beautiful black male, and other people were having problems with the semen, but this was semen I bought 20 years ago. But, you know, you know, when you have those sires and you do some long range planning and you know what phenotype marks well with what phenotype, you know, you could, because we just waited. It took us 20 years to get a bitch that produced well with the sire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a stable of frozen semen sort of spread across the country. So hopefully I'll stick around long enough to be able to use it all, or at least will it to somebody so they can use it. Because truly terrific, Jackie. Let's see. Madeline says a litter of 11 boykins, 5 weeks old, best thing that happened to us in 2020. That's the absolute truth, isn't it? Puppies seem to just be the thing. I always want to make a comment. So Madeline says we're not professional breeders, so thanks for letting me join. I'm always amazed. Someone said to me the other day, well, I'm not a big breeder like you. I'm like I've had 3 litters in 1 year once in my life. And I consider myself actually a small breeder. So we really welcome everyone. If you're just having 1 litter of puppies, doing it well really matters, because they're going to go to somebody who's going to love them for hopefully 13 or 14 years. So welcome. We're really glad you're here. Mary was talking about Bliss resorbing her litter. Yeah, that was a tough one. I'm so glad Ziggy and Fanny took. That was an exciting time, but it all worked out well. Madeline says, what's the oldest a bitch can be to have puppies? They can get pregnant for their entire lifetime. So a 13-year-old bitch could get pregnant. Really not recommended at all, but possible, because they don't have menopause. They don't stop cycling. They don't stop being fertile. They just get less fertile typically after 6, but we've had litters of 9 from 8-year-olds before, but it's obviously most of us wrap up at 6 or 7. We might, if there's an extraordinary opportunity to breed a bitch, but it's just a warning. They can get pregnant forever. And so don't ever be casual, even if you have a 12 or 13-year-old intact bitch around a young male, they can get pregnant. So a little different, thankfully, than us. Loreen, I don't see you, but if you want to unmute, is there a rule of thumb for maiden bitches in terms of age at first breeding? And horses, we want to successfully foal by 6 to know that they can carry to term. That's a really a good question, Loreen. And you can certainly get maiden bitches pregnant at 6 and 7. But from my experience, you tend to do better if you breed them between 2 and 4. And then if you want to wait and breed later. But I don't know that it's similar between dogs and horses, but from my experience, that early breeding and natural whelping is beneficial.
So if you get them bred and delivered, and then you could do something else for a couple of years and then know that you could come back to them.
Yeah, I don't know if you can say you know, but you have increased your likelihood, in my opinion. I mean, there is a significant drop off in fertility after 6 and older in bitches. But from our experience, that seems to be, that declines if they've already had a litter. That they seem, for some reason, maidens. I don't know if anybody else wants to chime in if they've had the same experience, but that's been our experience. Of course, I say that, and you know, I'm breeding a 4-year-old now, and I have a 3-year-old waiting that I haven't even gotten plans going on. So I'm not following my own rules, but it has been a weird year. Just saying. Was that your buckskin? Your mare?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
She's beautiful. She's beautiful.
She's available.
I saw that. I would put the word out. Not that horses are my thing anymore, but it was fun to see her. Crystal says, I'm getting my own stable in Wisconsin, Kansas, and Virginia. What are you doing, Crystal? I can't see if you can unmute. Oh, your stable of semen? Okay, Yeah, go ahead, Crystal.
Yes, frozen semen.
Yeah, I know. That's, I sort of have it spread around the country too. Don't want it all in one place. That's awesome. Make sure you will it to somebody.
Hopefully I don't need to do that yet.
I know, but we could all get hit by a bus. I hate to say it, and you know, they just throw it away.
That's true.
Yeah, it just goes down the drain. So
yeah, I'm still trying to figure out whether I really want to do 2 litters at once. It's like,
yeah,
and I'm going to be working full time, at least at home, but still.
That's still a lot. Yeah, especially, I always find the whelping piece is really challenging unless you have a lot of good help, because, you know, whoever whelps first needs some attention, and now you have a second whelping, and Lord knows how long those are going to take.
That
very beginning for me is the challenging piece.
It's easy, Gail.
It's easy. Go ahead, Celeste.
Oh, I'm doing 3. Come on.
I know. That's because you guys are just nuts.
I'm training my help right now.
Getting
everybody all lined up. Everybody, we've got coverage 6 days a week, and Tim can pick up slack on Sunday. So we've got everybody lined up. Last time we had 3 litters at once, I had teenagers at home, and that really helped. But this time it's just me post-surgery and really well-paid helpers.
So where did you get your help?
Well, one of them is a puppy owner who also works at a shelter a couple of days a week. And so on her days off, when she's not at the shelter at all, she'll be coming over. And then another one is I had several people that I was looking at, but a young woman in her early 20s, and well, they're both in their mid 20s. I think of them as girls at this point, but people that I know who are looking for work, but I have a long history with, and I trust them in my home. I trust them around the animals, and they've been with them. One will be doing more chores, and the other one will be doing more animal handling. And then I tagged Tracy Urban. She's only 30 minutes north to come to help with whelping.
That'll be perfect.
Yeah. And so we've got, you know, we've got the room, we've got the space, we've got it set up, but you just need hands, and you can't, and you need someone with each litter 24 hours a day. And so I just have to be sure that, that we're covered with it. And I know that from before, when we had 3 litters at once, that it was, and all 3 litters were born within 14 days of each other. It was literally crazy, but I had, you know, 2 teenage sons who were really helpful. And, but you know, doing it now, they just happened to come in within a week, and we just had a miss with Star with no puppies, perfect timing. And I was worried not to breed one of them. Right. You know, it's like, because everyone was waiting. They were in line when Bliss lost her litter, and then Star had the complete miss. And I just felt that I had a responsibility to try really hard to at least get one breeding, and we have 2. So,
yay. Yeah. And luckily not a missing swab still. Or
no. Oh, my goodness.
That was a night and a day.
And
for those of you who missed this,
the
owner of the sire, Mary's, and you were in Texas, is that right?
I was in Texas getting ready for spinal surgery. The owner of, and we got Fanny over on a Friday, met them, got the first breeding in. She bred Saturday evening. And then Sunday morning, the owner of the sire sent me an image of the slide. And the photograph was not very good and the slide was not very good. And I said to her, I'd like to see another slide and I want you to really get some good cells. And so she said, okay, well, the swab, as she started to do the twirl to get it around the corner, broke. And she heard the snap, pulled it out and had half of it.
There was a lot missing.
There was a lot missing. And apparently Fanny spun around and she said Fanny chewed on herself a little bit. And I think Fanny pulled it out at that point.
Go and Fanny.
Then she reaches me by phone. She's in a panic. And I said, how is Fanny? And she said, she's calm. And I said, then follow her lead. If she was really hurting, you'd know. She's calm. Where's your nearest ER vet? Well, the ER vet, bless his heart.
Oh, geez, that's right. So he's the one saying cervix is closed.
He says, I can feel her cervix and it's open. And I said, no, you can't. And he goes, yes, I can. And it's open. I'm afraid the swab's got in her uterus. And he was talking, we need to do an emergency spay and save her because this swab has gone into her uterus. And I'm like,
yes. And Mary's putting it out on the list and we're all like,
oh. And it was just, so then he says, I said, well, do you have a theriogenologist on board? A what? A repro vet. Oh yeah, I think we've got one of those, he says. And so he calls her, who informs him that no, you cannot feel the cervix and you're feeling that junction, the vestibular vaginal junction, that's not the cervix. And you'd be really hard pressed on a bitch on, you know, as her cervix is getting ready to close to get a cotton swab through the tip all by itself, you know. And so he apologized, got a lesson in anatomy, and I told the stud owner, just take her home. And they took her in the next morning, and an ultrasound technician scoped the vagina really well. I asked that he do an ultrasound just to be sure it didn't go anywhere else in the body. We dotted all of our I's, crossed all of our T's. The swab was not in Fanny. By then, she was, of course, completely out. I didn't get diestrus. But you know, I know she's pregnant. I've got LH.
There you go.
So
yeah. For those of you who ever hear anyone say, I can feel your bitch's cervix and it's either opened or closed, they can't. Even a contortionist could not get their hand in the smallest bitch to get to a cervix. That's one. And two, you know that they probably are not very familiar with the anatomy of a bitch. I had a young vet say, I can feel her cervix. And I'm like, no, you can't. Yes, I can. So that's just a really good note to all of us to know that you cannot, a human being cannot get their finger far enough into a bitch because of the turn. So there's a very sharp turn in a bitch. But I'll be honest, I was thinking about it after Mary's experience. Try very hard to not be afraid of vaginal cytology because of that, because yeah. In 40 years, literally have never heard of that.
You know, and a real quick bend of your swab, if there's a weak spot, it'll pop.
Yes.
As easily as that broke. Yeah.
Just take your swab. I don't have a swab with me, but I'm using my pen. Just before, so run your hand down the swab, you know, just before you put it in, feel if there's a break in it, and then just put a little weight on it. I don't know if you can see my picture. And if it pops, it's broken. It was broken before you got it out of the envelope. That's a easy check. I should put that in the course just so people know to make sure that there's not a problem.
It would have broken, that particular swab would have broken on anybody. And it wasn't anything.
No, yeah, it wasn't her fault. No.
I will probably never get her to do psych.
Not a shot. not a shot. Cool. Well, we're glad it ended well. It was a scary night, I'm sure, for you guys. It sure was for us.
Oh, okay. Worrisome. Okay, thanks.
And the only reason I mentioned finding help was because I would highly recommend that if you're working full time, if you're managing, let's see, maybe doing a little homeschooling on top of litters, looking for help is something that took me years to do. And even if you do what Mary says of having someone do chores while you focus on the puppies or your family focuses on the puppies, just clean up outside, scooping poop, cleaning, all of those things, disinfecting, laundry, you know, if you think about what having a litter begins to add up to, it's a huge amount of work if you're trying to manage a family now or a job now. And I would highly recommend, I know, you know, few of us have the money to pay huge amounts of money, but often it doesn't take a lot for people to say, yeah, I'll come and help you. Now, as Mary said, and I think everyone else will chime in, they have to be competent. And so chores are easy. Scoop and poop is easy. You don't need a lot of competence for that one. But think about it if you find yourself. So my trade-off always is, if I can't give the puppies what I think they deserve, then I need to get some help. And Andy and I decided when we moved to North Carolina, one is cheaper in North Carolina to get help than it is in New York, just saying. But also, you know, we're getting older. And so it's really nice to know there's somebody going to come in a few days a week and do some cleaning or some laundry. So don't avoid doing that, although you do have someone in your home and all of that, but it really can make a litter go more smoothly. So that's
my nieces have, this is Crystal again, my nieces have helped me when I had litters, and I used to have to actually go to work, and it was wonderful to have someone just come in and clean up the puppies, and when I got home it was done.
You could just enjoy them rather than thinking as you're coming home, like, oh, it's going to be a mess and I have to clean. And then you don't get to spend time socializing and things like that.
Yes, yes.
And young people are great. They usually come cheaper. And these days they're often looking for work and they, you know, may have more energy, et cetera. So I just wanted to throw that out there so we don't feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not a big breeder, I shouldn't have help. No, it's perfectly fine to have help. Lynn says, my Sheltie had two puppies once and she was losing amniotic fluid. She had to have a C-section, but the puppies were still one in each horn, but getting dry. Yeah, puppies were fine and she had a normal delivery. Played rough with a large dog before. That could be it, but the thing to remember is that those placentas have a limited lifespan and the end period of the whelping window happens very rapidly and the placenta will deteriorate to the point where it can no longer sustain puppies. And that's from the start of day 64 to about halfway through day 65. So this is why we push knowing your progesterone levels or knowing ovulation or LH or diestrous. Any of those three will give you the information you need. But there will be people who have a viable puppy with a 205 heartbeat on the evening of day 64, and they say, oh, I'll just give her another 36 hours. And by the beginning of day 66, the puppies are dead. So don't, I never want to hesitate to do a C-section. I have a natural whelping breed, so I don't usually look for C-sections, but making sure you don't let that whelping window go too long is essential. It's the death of more puppies. And so if you're finding that your puppies are dry or your puppies are difficult to revive, it may be you just waited too long. And so you want to make sure you are monitoring that, the end of that whelping window. Puppies actually do better early than they do late. The clock is definitely ticking on puppies.
She was having like minor contractions, but she didn't ever push hard, but she was losing fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to get a hold of the vet, and the vet didn't want to do anything in the middle of the night.
I know. And I feel for them too. But remember that we don't need to distinguish between hard and easy contractions. Any contraction, any visible contraction that you can see starts the clock. Because bitches are kind of phenomenal. They just don't go through the kind of labor that we envision. They will at the end often, where they're really bearing down on a puppy. But honestly, how many of you have had puppies just fall out? Like the bitch, you've literally never seen a contraction and boom.
Mel does that. They pop.
I know. They just, it's like, where did that come from? So they don't have to have hard contractions. And it always worries me when people say, oh, you know, she was contracting, but it wasn't hard. If you see contractions, you start that clock. And it is difficult when your vet doesn't want to do anything. But
I was just concerned because she had fluid coming out.
Absolutely. Something was happening.
No puppies. And so I was up. He wouldn't meet me in the night, and there was nobody else was open. That was when I lived somewhere else. So I met him. Well, I was there half an hour before the clinic opened.
Good move. First in line can help.
Of course, then they're like, oh, well, you should spay her because maybe she doesn't like having puppies. And I'm like, what?
Oh, well, I'm glad you've moved.
Gail, so, I have a question. Can I ask it now? I've been thinking about this. You know, I've been posting a lot about feeding the dog in the third trimester when they don't want to eat and stuff. So my thinking was, there's so much importance that we put on nutrition in before pregnancy, during pregnancy, and everything. And it seems to all go to hell when they don't want to eat. So, you know, it's like, just get them to eat, feed them. You know, my last few pregnancies, I was buying that gravy can, cheap Alpo dog food, and of which they loved and ate. But I'm wondering if the, like maybe the stillborns or the deformed puppies that might have been born, did that have anything to do with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Celeste, and I don't think we know. And it is really tough in that third trimester. I mean, some bitches started halfway through pregnancy refusing to eat. And it is brutally difficult because force feeding a dog for more than a meal or two is horrible if you've never done it. It's horrible for a couple of reasons. One, it can really destroy your relationship with the dog. And it can. I mean, it really can. And you need to have a relationship with them to whelp. You know, you need to be close. In addition, you are force feeding an animal with really big teeth and it does not want to eat. And you're sticking your hand into that mouth. So I think you're right, Celeste, that we, you know, I think of, who was it last year? Their bitch didn't eat for 2 weeks before whelping. I mean, it was amazing that those puppies came out okay, but she hadn't eaten anything. Those are really difficult. And I think the more we share ideas on how to get decent food into them, but it can be really hard. I was looking at the girl I'm breeding the other day. I'm like, oh God, I hope she just, because she's a good eater now. And hopefully she will stay that way because it is extremely hard. So sharing the ideas that work, like the, you know, removing the oatmeal that you did and cutting back on folic acid and playing with supplements to see if you can figure out a way to get them to eat. Because I do think it matters, but we also need to get calories into them. However, I do think maybe not the cheapest calories. I think that that's a good point.
Yeah, and I spend so much, I have spent so much time to get a regular food that's good for them and the regular supplements, and then to have to come up with something different it's hard. But anyway, I'm doing the best I can is to see if there might be a difference. And also, you know, you said cut back on folic acid. I did that one time, and that was the only time I had two cleft palates. I will never do that again. I will take that 5-MG, throw it down their throat every time. I don't care.
Yeah, and maybe it's things like we start playing with the timing of the folic acid in the food, because I normally just drop it in their food bowl.
Me too.
But maybe that's triggering nausea, because we know high doses of folic acid can cause nausea. I think we just keep sharing ideas on how, you know, be really grateful of the ones that keep eating and share ideas of things that are good for them that do encourage them to eat, because some of them are really, really resistant.
I'm at the point, I think, did I unmute myself? Yeah, I'm at the point.
No, you didn't. Hey.
I'm at the point with Ember. I'm going to be calling my puppy that we keep Costco, because the only thing that we have been able to get into her consistently for the last 5 days, Costco biscuits at 108 calories per. Not a lot of fat. She's spitting out every protein.
Like, yeah, so that's like carbs.
I got egg into her yesterday. Because Telus didn't like them, their little Costco things with cottage cheese and egg and stuff, and so I pretended I was eating them and she would take it from a fork, but I mean, I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
It really is. I wish I could tell you why it happens, but you're not alone, but it is
crazy. Her mom was like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to kind of think, like, there is no evolutionary benefit to not eating in pregnancy, and yet here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
So be grateful for the ones that do eat.
Yeah, I don't have any that do, so.
Yeah, I have a lot of picky eaters, and I found that if I rotate their food a ton long before they become picky, then it just doesn't happen.
I do think that's a really good point, Kelsey, because I mean, many of us may have had the experience in high school of, you know, having one of those bad nights and say mine was rum, and I just can't have rum. Like, this has been 45 years and I can't smell it because it was just a really bad night. It was a stupid night. So dogs do the exact same thing. You know, if that food triggers nausea in relatively short order, they're not eating it again. So what Kelsey's doing is they don't get that same food again. And so they're willing to try, okay, well, the next one may not be so bad, and they try it. And I do think rotating is super helpful in getting them used to it early. And second, the instant you see you've got morning sickness, stop feeding them the food you want them to eat. So that if they imprint on it, to reduce the risk that they're going to imprint on the food that you want them to eat all the time. So that's the moment to go to the really horrible canned stuff, because you don't really care if they imprint on that. And then bring back in the good food in a couple of days when hopefully they're not so nauseous. So.
You know, Renee, yes, fresh pet is perfect, except for this bitch. She just...
I can't believe she doesn't eat fresh pet.
Well, like, she normally does. No, she normally does. And I rotate and I do all that stuff with her. Yeah, I know. No, she's just... Yeah.
Not doing it.
You know, my girl will eat during pregnancy, but she, as soon as she whelps, she has like
a week and a half where she is the pickiest. And it's like, you know, she will not eat except out of my fingers. She will only eat, you know, 3 bites of steak, then 3 bites of chicken. And I mean, I basically have just decided that if she's just going to want to be spoiled for a week, then I'll just do whatever I can to get calories into her. But, you know, I don't know if anybody has good ideas on that. The only thing that I have found, thank God for Avidog and Mother's Pudding, because I think one of the reasons she likes to get pregnant is so she can get Mother's Pudding. Because it's like her favorite. And that I can get calcium in it. I can put fenugreek in it. I can put, you know, sunflower lecithin in it. That she will eat. And the other thing that I found helps is if I bring the other dogs nearby to stare mournfully.
Competition matters.
Yeah, at her, hoping that they could have whatever she's eating.
And do you ever like say, oh, she doesn't want it here, guys?
Oh, completely. Completely. Yeah. She eats 3 bites of freshly made liver and then she won't eat it. Then I give it the others and they're like, oh, and then she's like, well, actually I'll have.
Maybe I could have just.
Yeah, no, completely. And the other thing that I found worked this time was, so we don't party quite as hard as you did in high school, Gail, but when we party around here, what I call a party is I throw cat food on the floor and I go, who wants a party? And they're all like, we do. And I throw cat food on the floor and it's only like a 35 second party, but it's a very, very fun party. So what I started doing was I bring her out for the party and then she didn't want to eat anything, but if I put cat food on the floor, it's kibble, and then all the other dogs eat it, then I quickly feed her a bunch of palmfuls of cat food before she figures out what happened.
Right. So that, I mean, I actually
ate trying everything. And then like after a week and a half, she's fine. And she just will eat normally again. She goes right back to like her normal food supplements, no problem. But it's like that week. And I didn't know, I mean, I guess it's not morning sickness. She doesn't have any trouble with food before whelping,
some hormones are off.
Yeah.
And if you didn't see the conversation we were having on the Facebook page, one of the things that I do is I have a bowl full of kibble and I trip in the dog room.
Oh, totally. I totally do
and
that.
Spill it on the ground.
No.
Exactly. And I'm like, no, you can't have it. And they are on it. So different plates, different bowls, different places. All those things, just keep trying different things to see if it helps, as crazy it is.
And then we're looking at the Mother's Pudding. And then the other thing I did this time is I made Mother's Pudding into ice cream because they do love ice cream. So I just froze some Mother's Pudding. So that was like, you know, the other dogs are like, can we be pregnant, please?
I know, please. Please, why am I just a boy? Someone made the comment a little further down. I'm going to try and stick with the questions that said that appetite or eating behavior can be inherited. And I tend to agree with that. I tend not pregnancy appetite, but generally, I think that dogs that are ravenous all the time, that we know is a genetic trait in Labradors, that's been found. So that can get passed on. And I also think that picky behavior, that belief that everything you're handing them is poison and they have to check it ahead of time to make sure that you're not trying to kill them after 15 years. I think that both of those can be inherited. I also think that they can be I don't think the ravenous can be influenced in puppyhood, but I think the picky eating can be influenced in puppyhood and that we need to make it a habit to eat, but we can talk about that at a different time. I'm going to make sure we're getting to questions. Okay, hang on. I'm going to move on. Madeline, how many times should you breed a bitch? Watching her deal with 11 puppies, I feel like we shouldn't ask this of her again, although she seems to be a good mom. So, Madeline, I don't think there's a ideal answer to that. Some breed clubs have limitations. Some breeders, so I won't breed a bitch more than 4 times, and that would be extraordinary. It's usually no more than 3 times, only because I most likely have gotten the genetics that I want out of her. And so I want to move on to the next generation or to another generation. Bitches are made to be bred. Back-to-back breedings are not a terrible thing. But how do we decide whether we should breed back-to-back? We look at the bitch after the litter has gone home. And I don't mean look at her because she's going to have no hair. And she's probably going to have really saggy boobs at that point. So don't be looking at her from that perspective. But say, is her weight good? Is her health good? Did she have a positive experience? It's hard to look at them when the puppies are, say, 2 weeks old or 3 weeks old, when they've just, you know, they're developing teeth and they're becoming sort of boring, and say, is she a good mother or not? Unless you're seeing aggression. But look at it as they go home and say, was this a good experience for that, for her or not? Or was it a tolerable experience or was it a bad experience? If I have a bitch that has a bad experience, then I might breed her one more time and see. And often a bitch that in her first litter, particularly if it's a large litter, so your girl had 11, that's a big litter, they might be overwhelmed with that. And then the second litter, they're really cool with the whole thing. They're great. They figured it out. They're comfortable with it. It's not an unknown. I think that's, you could certainly take a bitch out of the gene pool for being aggressive to her puppies from the beginning and not that not being reconcilable either with calcium or with your efforts. But, you know, they can breed 4, 5, 6 times during their lives without it being problematic, as long as they're healthy, they whelp naturally, they're not having repeated C-sections, they're not aggressive towards their puppies, and you're happy with what they produced, that it was a good experience. Mickey says, any tricks to getting more females in the litter? Heck if I know. I actually happened to be reading a bunch of research on this last week. I don't know why I did. Nothing that these researchers found produced more males or females. The only thing, and I think this is bizarre, but lines with cryptorchidism tend to produce larger litters with more males. Nobody knows why. It's clearly somehow inherited with cryptorchidism. But if you want more bitches, I can't help you. I don't know. And I've had litters of all bitches. I don't know. That I can't help you with. Anybody have any?
I inherited through the male or female line.
Cryptorchidism, both. Both. So the study, I thought I posted it, but maybe I didn't, or maybe you just didn't read it because it was a really dry study.
Yeah, I think you did. I've just been crazy and haven't had a chance to read it here.
Cryptorchid males bred to a carrier bitch, largest litters, most males. And this study tends to think that there's an evolutionary benefit to having more males. Don't know why, but that they were seeing that as a positive. Carrier to carrier is next, most largest litters, and then it goes from there. So somehow that gene is related, and that's probably why the gene has stayed in the gene pool through all of these generations.
That's interesting, because of my cryptorchid litter, all but one have dropped now.
And oh, good.
And it was 5 boys and 2 girls.
That's great. Well, I'm glad they're down.
More boys.
Yeah, more boys. And you know, if you have a minimum of one cryptorchid, you know both the male and the female carry it. And if the sire has 2 normal testicles, then you know the most he can be is a carrier. But he is a carrier, definitely. Now, read the paper that I wrote. I don't necessarily think we should take, in fact, I don't think we should take carriers out of the gene pool, but we do have to recognize that there will be some heartaches there, because some of your best boys may end up to be cryptorchid in breeding them. So. But I'm glad they're deaf.
Would you consider, now that they're all dropping, even though they're late, would you no longer consider it cryptorchid?
Yeah, they're not crypt orchid if they've dropped.
They did go ahead and drop.
Right, but the one that hasn't dropped. So what they are is late dropping. And late dropping, there's a strong suspicion that that is also inherited. And it, they may end up being sort of a continuum, just a spectrum, because what may cause the crypt orchids that are either up and down or you can feel them is that the ring just happens to close before it comes down. You know, so some of them it's going to be able to sneak through and others it won't. But honestly, we really don't know. They've been looking really aggressively in Siberian Huskies trying to find the gene and just haven't been able to find it. And there's pretty strong evidence that it's not the same gene in every breed, of course, because that would be too easy. But I think it's a matter of try breeding them and see what you get. I mean, my second litter ever was 100% crypt orchid. So that was a quick lesson in, okay, let's not blind breed on that line again. She never produced another crypt orchid because I went a long way away from that line. Okay. Tara, I see you. Can you unmute? Do you wanna? I don't know if you can. I'm gonna be a first time breeder for owls this next season. There you go. Looks like you're, hey. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
There you go. So do you wanna give us your question?
Sure. I'm a first time breeder and actually I got to come and help evaluate Lorraine's litter.
Oh, terrific.
So I just had a phone consult yesterday with the repro vet and we talked, I went through the list and of course I forgot to ask about Oxy, but we went through the list and I asked her about post-whelping check on Alice because this will be our first time as well as neo check of the puppies. And she said, honestly, if the whelping goes without complication, I don't want to see you for the first 7 weeks unless we have to, because I don't want to see the puppies. But I want to phone conference, get pictures, you know, if there's trouble suckling, if there's other issues, if there's discharge that, you know, we talk about, I want you coming in. But she said, honestly, I'm good with that as long as we're in contact throughout. But I just wanted to ask you, is that something you've experienced and how do you feel about that?
I think that that's perfectly fine, especially if she'll do video or if you're live streaming or texting. I would say, I'll let others chime in, 80 to 85% of bitches don't need to be checked after whelping. Whelping goes smoothly. There aren't any issues. She's clearly done. Discharge is normal. Puppies are fine. Then you don't need to take her in. That vet is giving you an idea of her practice. And I don't mean there's a problem with her practice, but that there's infectious disease in there. And so she's advising you based on that. So one of the things that you can do if you feel like, gosh, I just cannot tell if everything's normal and you've tried the video, is you can take your bitch. Now, I'm assuming, are you in Alberta?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's cold. I was going to say, you can take the bitch and see if the vet will examine her in the car.
Because I did ask her that, and she said, yes, if we had okay. to, I
yep.
have a problem doing that on the back of your truck. We'll make it work. Yeah, she's absolutely open to working with us.
That's great. Oh, she sounds terrific. I don't think this is abnormal in any way, and I think it's very frank, in fact. And sort of honest, if you end up at the end of the whelping and you're feeling really unsure about where things stand and your bitch is not settling, often there's a very significant change in the bitch after the last puppy is born. And they settle, they calm down, they are caring for their puppies in a more intense way. And then you can feel pretty comfortable about what's happening. And obviously you have all of us to turn to as well. But if she's not settling and you're seeing more contractions and you're just not sure, then I would talk to your vet and shoot her some video and see if she can just check her out.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because, again, this is my first time and I really enjoyed. She spent an hour on the phone with me yesterday.
Wow.
Let me go through my questions and assured me they're 24/7. Even if she's not working, there's 3 repro specialist vets there as well as 2 techs. And if I need to come in, I can come in. So I'm feeling really good about things. It is about an hour and a half to hour 45 minute drive, but I'm feeling really good about this. And I know Lorraine's not far from me, so she offered to help if I need help.
And you have us on the forum too.
Yes, somebody's awake. Just saying, I think we really all have insomnia, or many of us do, because I'm always sort of amazed at when people show up on the list, but I'm often there at 3 in the morning. So I think she sounds like a great vet.
Well, and I do. I Gail, I came to 2 of the courses that you taught in Calgary, and, you know, I'm just starting to come on these calls because we're getting closer. And I do feel extremely supported by, and I'm not excluding men if there's men a part of this, but it's definitely a family of women. And I'm feeling very good going into this first breeding. So thank you to all of you.
We're excited for you. That's great. When is she due?
She should go into season in February.
Great. Okay.
She's been very consistent with 10 and a half month cycles, and she will be just under 4 years old.
Great. That's a good age, and excited for you.
And it'll be a TCI Siemens coming from Germany, because we were supposed to travel to Austria and that's not happening now with COVID.
No. Ship the semen right now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Terrific. Laura, a breeder friend is convinced that small litters are correlated with bitches that get shown a lot and campaigned in confirmation. He doesn't believe that low litter size are related to maternal history. I think on the one hand that he can be right, and on the other hand, he's wrong. So I do think that the stress of a lot of showing, like specialing, can absolutely reduce the fertility. And I didn't get a chance to post a study I was reading yesterday about stress in sperm count, but really clear evidence that stress diminishes sperm viability. And I was thinking of dogs that are specialed. And you kind of think of the life of a special. If you don't show dogs, these are the dogs that compete at the highest level at Westminster and things like that. And their lives are usually moving around the country, living on a truck or in a kennel, and going to a different show every week. And it can be really stressful for dogs, even the most stable, well-trained dogs. So I think on that count that he's right, but I also know maternal history has, the timing has a lot to do with it, maternal history, age. So he's half right.
Got it.
scrolling down. Megan says, I show my dogs and my girl had a litter of 12 and a litter of 13. I don't think showing has anything to do. I think that some dogs are fine with it, but I don't think all of them are. I know actually a lot of really wonderful golden retriever bitches that were best in show, multiple best in show dogs, and never had more than 1 or 2 puppies. And that's not at all uncommon, that they just, hence why people show their bitches young and retire them. Same with field trial dogs. Usually those dogs have to be retired in order to really have good sized litters. Be grateful, Megan, that yours did well. Let's see, improving sperm quality in a young male, 18 months old, had 2 natural matings, sperm low in number, but relatively high abnormal, higher abnormal counts. So young males that have poor fertility, you'll do best with a good workup. So what kinds of things influence sperm quality? A fever 2 months prior, a fever 1 month prior can completely wipe out sperm counts. A significant stressor, heat, living in a kennel and lying on hot pavement. You know, the dogs that do the Superman lie where they flip their legs out backwards? They're just cooking their testicles and can significantly diminish their sperm count. This dog is not a competition butt dog, but dogs that are living on pros trucks or living in handlers' kennels can have a significant impact. Stress, as I was just saying. Nutrition. So I think I've told the story before, for those of you who remember, we had a lovely middle-aged stud dog who was producing really well. Litters of 10 was probably his average. And his owner, it was a supplement was recommended to her, and she put him on a supplement that included kelp. And within 3 weeks, there was literally no freezable semen left. It just spiraled into nothing. So we had a great repro vet who went through and said, what's changed? You know, because they had just frozen him and now they can't freeze him. And she said, oh, well, I put him on this supplement, and they took him off. And 3 months later, he had perfectly normal semen and was freezable. So the saying that I was always taught is, what can kill semen? Anything can kill semen. It's really important to go through and look for the things that may be causing problems. That said, there are just some dogs that aren't very fertile. And one of the things to always check, and I know this sounds really bizarre, but check the size of your dog's testicles and check the texture of your dog's testicles. So bigger is better in dogs. The larger the testicles, usually the better fertility the dog has. And they shouldn't be spongy. They shouldn't be soft and spongy. They should be firm, but not hard. And so if you go through the stud dog course, you know you should be checking this regularly on your dogs. And it really does matter. If you see the change in the size of your dog's testicle, or one's bigger than the other, or they're changing in texture, get them into the vet ASAP. Do not wait. Do not say, oh, let me see if this is going to change. Because once dogs begin to spiral down, it's often not reversible. So I don't know if that's helpful, but hey Tracy.
Yeah, it is helpful. Thank you. He spends 1 day a week with the groomer and in doggy daycare, which may be a stress, and they feed a raw diet, but he has got a supplement. We will bring his weight down and I'll remove the supplement and see how he goes. He otherwise the only
and
other
weight thing, weight can matter, although it doesn't sound like he's obese.
No, he's solid. Not. Line is solid.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't want him too thin, because thin isn't great either. But one of the things you always want to watch is heat on those testicles. And it's so, been, what's that?
It's been winter here, so it hasn't. And he's inside.
Yep. Yeah. The other thing to ask is, he's in doggy daycare. Is he being groomed as well?
Yeah. And the groomer is a poodle breeder, and he knows about that his testicles are well looked after. And
yeah. No blow drying those testicles.
No, I've done that one. Yeah.
Literally, we have the weirdest conversations. Yeah. Yeah,
don't forget the
Glycoflex.
Yeah.
Yep. I was not wanting to disrupt things, but yeah, I might get some Glycoflex Flex. I think we have to get it. I have to order it from the US. It's not available.
Yeah. Do you have other green lip muscle products though? Because that might be fine. It's just in the US, that's the easiest one to get. But I think you guys have more availability of green lip muscle products. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The poodle breeder recommends vitamizing kale leaves, the green leaves, not the stems, just the leaves. Haven't tried it yet, but I just thought I'd ask you first.
Yeah, I mean, it would hard to be imagine that it could be problematic, but it is semen. And one of the biggest challenges in recovering a young dog is just how long it takes to know whether you're being successful or not. You know, it's usually months. So you go really slowly with those changes. And can you collect him or is he being collected?
So
I think, you know, like collecting every 3 weeks and seeing if you see an improvement or not will be helpful.
Thanks.
Good luck. Let us know. Let's see. Jen, we talked about how to avoid breaking a swab, testing it this way and that way. A good quality swab will not break under the pressure you put on with a bitch, but you do want to just test it to make sure that it's not flawed. I'm looking to see. Jen got her new microscope. That's exciting. More encouragement of help. I do think that really is beneficial to many of us if you don't have children or teenagers or people that can help you at home. It's really nice if you have a husband or a spouse that helps. Susan, 2 of 4 females at 14 months who haven't had a first heat. I saw you on there. There you are. 14 months is not at all out of normal for a first heat.
No.
Yeah.
No, so when we read down further a little bit, Gail, 2 of the youngsters at 13 and a half months approximately sort of started. One is in a puppy home, one is with me. Their vulvas were slightly swollen. The puppy home had a couple of drops on the blood on the floor that they discovered, a little bit more licking and nothing past that. 4 or 5 days later, it's as though the puppy owner said to me, I feel like I made it up. And I'm like, no, you probably didn't make it up. Let me just discover what split heats might be. I don't know if that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, so it could be one of two things. Well, it could be. But chances are, if they saw blood and they saw swelling, it's either a split heat or it's an anovulatory season. And an anovulatory season often happens in the first season. Not at all unusual in young bitches. So this is a season where they simply don't ovulate. And so they will often not complete the season because they don't get the LH peak and they don't get ovulation. And so they just go out of heat. It's actually not abnormal at any time in a bitch's life, but they are more common in those first couple of seasons. So how do we tell the difference between a split heat when they come in and then they go back out again and an ovulatory season where they just never ovulate? We wait. And if they come back in season in 3 to 4 weeks, 5 weeks, then it was a split heat. If they come back in season in 8 or 9 months, then it was an anovulatory season. Neither is really indicative of a problem. They're not abnormal. They're not indicative that we need to do a workup. The only challenge is what we don't know. And at 14 months, I'm assuming you're not breeding them. On this heat,
One is in the puppy home, Gail. One is in the puppy home. She will be spayed, and that's part of the discussion with the owner. And the other one is in my home and potentially is going to be bred.
But not in this heat.
No, not in this heat for sure. And in fact, I don't even, I have, I saw nothing in blood at all. I only saw a slight puffiness of, and some extra licking of her vulva, and that was it. There was nothing, like, there was no discharge at all, ever.
Yeah.
But the puppy home had it. Yeah.
They had some drops of blood, and drops of blood are obviously the most indicative that the bitch went into season. She likely did not complete a normal, typical season, but it wasn't necessarily an abnormal season. Are they looking to spay her? So you're trying to figure out when they should spay? Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, exactly. That one's a little rougher, but I still think that you are pretty safe waiting 3 months. So normally we would want to wait 3 months. Yeah. So if it's a split heat, she will come back in season in those 3 months. So then you'll just wait a little bit longer. If she just had an anovulatory season, then you wait your 3 months. She's in anestrus and you do the spay. It's not going to be problematic. So I think if they think about waiting 3 months, it'll be fine.
Okay, thank you. So that the dam, their mom was 13 and a half months when she had her first heat cycle. So for the one that, for the female I'm keeping, I'm not too worried about it. It'll come when it comes. But the puppy home, she had blood. She saw a little bit more advanced than what I was experiencing. They want to spay. So, okay, thank you. I will look into that and suggest that 3 months from now, they just...
Yeah, exactly. Chances are, now if she comes in season again, if it's a split heat and she comes back in season, they have to wait a little bit longer. But otherwise, I can't imagine it would be an issue.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Sure. Let's see. Renee is asking if anybody else used PG-600. She knows Celeste has. Who else used it? Is it anybody on the call? I know we had somebody who used it and I think had 13 puppies.
Linda used it with her dog.
Linda used it as well, Linda Hoover.
Had what, 11, I think 10 or 11 puppies. And it was very successful. Everything was perfect timing and didn't.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of who else piped in when we were talking about last time. Renee, if you go on the group and just search on PG-600, I think you'll see the people that have used it. For those of you who aren't familiar, PG-600 is one of the drugs that we use to bring bitches in season. Well, when, it's an appropriate time, so they're at least 4 months from their last heat, or in the case of PG-600, they can not have ever come in season, but they're adults. And, we're not trying to bring in 6-month-olds, but PG-600 can be successful. We also have cabergoline, which is another drug that brings them in. And in some cases, you can use a product called Ovuplant, but that's very hard to get. I don't know if it's more available in Canada, but it's hard to get in the United States. More available in Europe.
Ovuplant is not available in Canada.
It's not.
There's only like 6 hospitals in the U.S. that have it. It's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
I'm considering the PG-600 to short cycle at least one of the girls to try to move things along, because they've historically have laughed at cabergoline, although that's my preference, but they sort of laugh at it.
But yeah,
I have a very inexpensive source for that, which is great. That helps. So that helps.
But PG-600 is not an investment either. Certainly worth trying, Renee. I mean, what's really the harm? The bitch may not agree with you, but...
Renee, the worst that can happen is, and I've had this happen, give the shots and nothing happened. My vet said that, to put it in simple words, there's nothing there to get going. You know what I mean? The dog just wasn't ready to go into season. And it had something to do with the fact that it knocks off scar tissue on the ovaries and stuff like that. So, I did an experiment this last time I used it. It significantly cuts down, if not completely, any pain that the shot causes by warming the shot up in your hands. You know what I mean? In this syringe. Okay. That's it.
Laura asked, has anybody shipped semen into New Zealand? I have not. Has anybody else done that?
Yeah, Jacqueline Batson, she just...
Sorry, I'm not keeping up. Sorry.
Yep. She responded.
So you're good. Cool. So I have a note in here about talking about puppy raising, and I'm more than happy to do that. It's a very appropriate conversation to have on these calls. It's not all about breeding, but helpful if we have more specific questions about the issues. And certainly really good conversation to have on the Facebook page. There's been some terrific input on things to use and how to build them. And gosh, I think we should all hire Sarah Hartwig's husband, our puppy coach. She's got the litter of the 12 Rhodesians. Her husband's making some amazing stuff. Just remarkable stuff. I keep showing it to my husband and he's not impressed at this point. but yeah, if we have questions about puppy raising, this is a really great place to ask them. Tonight, we happen to have focused primarily on sperm and semen and testicles and bitches cycles, but we can cover the gamut on these calls. So I'll take a last few questions, but I've already kept you over, so I don't want to keep anybody too late. Any last? Oh, Susan's showing us babies. She looks great, Susan. They look great. Babies make me happy to see these days.
They're 17 days old.
Oh, my gosh. They look wonderful. How are they doing?
They're doing great. They are... Havana silk puppies. The smallest one, who I'll try to grab him here. He's almost walking.
Is he the one in the front? No, he's
this guy here. He weighed, oh, sorry. She got up. He only weighed 2.2 ounces when he was born.
Wow.
And I did not have to supplement. He is just a vigorous nurser. And he's just done great. He was the first one to open his eyes. Their ears are almost open and they're really becoming upright.
Yeah, I can see how well they're moving. Yeah. She's like, Mom, I don't want to be on camera. That's great. She's lovely.
Yeah, they have done so well. This is my first time doing any of this, and it's been a really wonderful experience. And I too have a wonderful husband who is in the process of building me an adventure box.
Oh, go him.
So we've got lots of good stuff for that, and you probably can't see it, but I do have a mountain in the middle of this.
I actually can see it. Yeah.
It's a mountain for them. And there's usually stuffed toys in here. My daughter took them out. I guess she's been in and out all day taking puppies. The puppies, I must say, are handled like you wouldn't believe. So that's really nice. And we finished our scent, the ESI and everything yesterday, and they did great. They were very attentive. They were very interested in
the scent. So what did they like the most?
I think they liked the balsam fir candle the least, and they liked a banana.
Oh, mine are not banana kids.
And I've got to look on my list. I can't remember. It seems like years ago since I did that because I've been so busy with this. We did orange peels, rosemary, lavender. I know what the most favorite was, a big hunk of dirt, shovel full of, like a little trowel full of dirt. That's what it was.
It is kind of remarkable how much they love dirt. And, yeah. You know, if you think about it, comparing dirt from a dog's perspective to the candle, you know, so that candle may smell like balsam fir to us.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder what it smells like to them, because it probably doesn't smell like balsam fir to a dog. And dirt is this amazing world of all of these different odors. And this sounds terrible, but dead animals, you know, tiny little things. And my puppies always love dirt. They're just fascinated by it. So that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I can't tell you thank you enough for the course. It has gotten me through everything. Because there's nobody where I am in Florida that could help me. So I did it all myself with the Abdog, with my binder right beside me. We will be continuing with it as the weeks go by.
Well, we can't wait to watch them grow up. That's great. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah,
thanks.
And I see.
Hey, Gail.
Yeah, hey.
It's Teal. Can I ask you a quick question real quick?
Hi, Teal. Sure.
I'm basically boxing up everything and just kind of setting all my breeding stuff aside and just need it gone for a bit. And so taking a break, and I think that's the only way I can do it mentally. But my question is, as far as fine-tuning the nutrition and really making sure that I have everything ready to go when and if I breed possum, do I want to do that like the heat before? I just kind of want to just own dogs for a little bit and
step back. be a dog mom and hang out.
Yeah, but I don't want to mess up my nutrition too much on her and get behind and if we do it in a year or two.
Yeah, so you can absolutely leave her on all life stages diet with the basic supplements. So that's going to be ProBalance, a probiotic, fish oil. And that can be a lifetime nutrition through their entire lives. But we know that about 4 months is what it takes to change the nutritional status of a dog. So if for some reason you want to back off, or maybe she's one of those dogs that puts on a lot of weight on an all life stages diet, then you can back her off to maintenance, or, you know, take one of the supplements out. And then as you're approaching 4 months out or 5 months out, then you can put her back on them again.
Okay, because I got two. I got one in a, my friend has one that we were going to breed and I'm holding off on. And then, you know, possum's only 10 months now. So I got a long while before I have to really worry about her. But I just want everything up and out of my face as far as the breeding stuff goes. The Abadog stuff I'm not bailing on yet because I don't want to get behind. But, and it keeps me somewhat sane.
We would miss you. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So there you go. You can leave them on it, or you can switch them and bring them back onto it.
And the folic if I'm going to breed them at all, I think I remember you saying you like them on the folic acid just their whole life, their breeding life, right?
No.
So they'll cut back on that.
Oh, no, okay. Actually, folic acid doesn't need to start till they come in season, and then you can take them.
Oh, okay. I totally misunderstood that. Okay.
That's okay. Yep. Then take them off right when the puppies are weaned.
All right. Thank you.
Cool.
I have a quick question.
Hey, Lynn.
My one girl, puppies went home. Normally, she goes back on her regular diet and is fine. But this time, well, it probably didn't help. We had a ton of snow and a blizzard and all that. But she's going and stealing all the other dogs' food. She's going and stealing food from the animals and stuff too. Vet said she's fine. She's just a little overweight. But I'm like, what is with her this time that she's like eating like she's pregnant, but she's not. At least as far as I know, she didn't go see the boy.
Yeah, hopefully not. Is she possibly in a false pregnancy?
No, because she's just coming in heat now.
Oh, well, she knows that if she's going to be bred, she should eat more and increase her plane of nutrition.
She's not going to be bred right now.
I know. I'm kidding. How old is she, Lynn?
Seven.
Yeah. So I find that's not at all abnormal. But the one thing that I would do is that add cooked pumpkin to her diet. Cooked pumpkin's a great thing. And add a fair amount. You know, it's not like a little dollop. You want to increase the volume of her food, say, by a third. And the great thing about pumpkin is couple of good things. Vast majority of dogs like it, and they actually don't.
He loves it.
Yep. And it sticks with them so that it makes them feel fuller longer. And so they tend to be happier if they're getting it, even if you've had to cut back their food. Because
I've cut back her food, but then she'll go and steal her daughter's food.
Yeah. Well, definitely don't let that happen. No stealing anybody else's food, and try really hard to not let her steal the other animal's food.
But I'll try the pumpkin. Maybe that'll help her not feel like she's.
Yeah. Hungry. I use it a lot. Really, as soon as I'm starting to cut back on my dogs, they're getting pumpkin. I just stewed probably the 12th pumpkin.
The first vet I ever worked for used to tell me to use it when you had any diarrhea or anything like that.
Yep.
But I didn't think about using it the other way to help them lose some weight.
Great gut stabilizer, and it makes them feel fuller.
And my male's doing good. He's gained weight.
Terrific. That's great.
So now I just have the opposite.
Yeah, I know. Boys versus girls. Lorene asks, regular canned pumpkin. Regular canned pumpkin is fine. You can stew tomatoes. Those are fine. Pumpkins, you can Instapot them or just buy the canned. Although right now in the U.S., it's really, really hard to get canned pumpkin. I know all of my orders have been canceled, so I've been relegated to the Instapot. Okay, guys, we are over time, so we are gonna jump off, but it was great to see everybody tonight. Last one, Brenda, can puppies have pumpkin? They can have pumpkin at 6-7 weeks, not before that. But yes, they can have pumpkin and through puppyhood. So terrific. We will see you guys on the 16th at 2 p.m. Living with Intact Dogs. And otherwise, I will see you on Facebook and in office hours. Don't forget office hours tomorrow morning. Shoot your questions to me and I will get them answered. Bye, everybody. Good night.